All right. Thanks. Welcome to another edition of Mental Health Monthly with myself, Dan DeGrice, and my co-host, Chris Mussel. Chris, where do we find you?
Hey, thanks. Down here in Dallas, just north of Dallas. I work for McKinney Fire, and then I've resided here my whole time.
All right. We got a special guest this time, the Chief David Rhodes, the one and only Editor-in-Chief of Fire Engineering. Dave, welcome.
Good to see you guys.
Thanks for being our first guest on our show, and it's rightfully so, right? Because you gave us this platform. So,
yep, and I appreciate you humbling accepting the challenge.
Yeah, so we'll see how long we go with this. I got a whole intro here of you. You got a long history. You got a heck of a biography and resume. For those of you that don't know Chief David Rhodes, I'm going to just lay out a couple of things and then tell you why Chris and I actually have him on the show today. Again, as you just heard, he had asked us to do a mental health monthly podcast. There's a few of them out there, but we're going to find out exactly what Dave wants us to do here. Better understand his belief and understanding in mental health and what the road in the forward, you know, going forward looks like. But Chief David Rhodes, Editor-in-Chief Fire Engineering and FDIC Education Director. That's the basic. Everybody kind of knows that, but there's so many more things to you, right? I think if I got it right, it's 37 or 38 years so far and still going strong. Many of the things that you've done, from being a battalion chief in Atlanta to doing Polaris Public Safety Solutions, Georgia Smoke Divers, Board of Elders, Advisory Board for UL Firefighter Safety and Research, been involved in union administration, all sides of it. Before we move forward, first question. Who is David Rhodes? And what are you most proud of so far?
Just a regular guy that chose the fire service as a career after not much time debating back and forth. I was working at a land surveying company during high school. So when I graduated from high school, I kind of continued that through the summer. But the firefighting bug kind of hit me and I was drawn into that. So I started at my local department, where I grew up in Conyers, and, stayed there about 7 years and then ended up going to the city of Atlanta in 92 and doing 30 years there. Been married for 31 years. And got three kids. The youngest one's 21 and the oldest one's 25. And two of them are kind of on their own. And the last one's in her senior year of college. And so just spent the last 30 years working in Atlanta and raising kids and going to volleyball tournaments and dance recitals and gymnastics meets and all the things that normal folks do with a shift schedule on that also, because wife would go one way to dance recital and I'd go the other way to volleyball tournament. And we were laughing the other day that we really never hardly were together at one event with the kids, because you become, you know, you become the logistics chief of your of your kids' activities. But yeah, Smoke Divers is a huge thing that I'm proud of. I actually just passed off all the duties of that, including the sort of the sergeant drill yard guys called the Smoke Daddy. I passed that off a little over a year ago, and then passed off the incident command role two classes ago. So I still go and support that, but it's in very capable hands, and I'm still sort of an advisor to the program, and that program has spawned two other programs that are identical, just in Indiana and Oklahoma. So that's a big accomplishment. The research and UL stuff was also a huge thing to be involved in. And I think once you reach a certain age, they make you emeritus. So they made me emeritus a couple of years ago. And again, I'm sort of still in an advisory role and stay in touch, but not in the day-to-day research and in those groups. And then, I guess the relationships that have come out of 38 years of being involved in all of that has just been tremendous. And I enjoy the fact that I've been able to be a resource of almost matchmaking, whether it's somebody's researching something and I'll be like, oh, you need to talk to this person, or somebody's trying to start a fire academy or build a certain prop, and it's like, oh, you need to talk to this person. And seeing that some of those relationships turned into businesses that are successful, some of them are just friendships, and some of them helped, improve the fire service. But that's kind of been the goal, is to carry on the things that the mentors taught me about motivation, leadership, and leaving it better than you found it. And, but never forgetting that it's the relationships that are the number one, thing to concern yourself with. All the rest of it works out.
Yeah. I think when Chris and I talked about introductions and, how do you introduce, Chief David Rhodes and so many accomplishments over so many years, and you probably think, man, that was like in a blink of an eye, right? From this podcast and what you want us to do and carry out here, I've been in behavioral health my entire life. Many people know me. Grew up in a family where my father struggled with many different things, substance use being one of them, mental health. He was a Marine veteran, like Chris's, Chicago police officer. The only time I knew about behavioral health was when he went away, and then back then very little. Other than that, in the fire service, I really didn't think about it much in the better part of probably the first 15 years of my career. Where does mental wellness, mental health fit in your career?
Well, I was very fortunate that, I had a strong, family, strong home life. Parents were together, still together, still alive. Had a sister. So I had a good family unit. When I started in the fire service, it was a small 20 person department, very, very much, family support. There wasn't a whole lot of, there's always politics in any organization, but there wasn't a whole lot of promotions and a whole lot of turnover. So there wasn't a lot of opportunities for things to go awry there. It was sort of like your senior people were your senior people, and you knew they were going to get promoted, and it was expected and deserved. So I didn't really have any issues there. Where I got interested was sort of the effects of poor leadership and poor policy in an organization. And I've always said it's like I was very fortunate, because in the organization I went through a lot, whether it was punishment assignments or just not being – the biggest one was just not being allowed to contribute in certain areas that you had interest in. There was a time when nobody wanted to go to the training academy, and I volunteered to go to the training academy, but wasn't allowed because I was union president. So they didn't want me to have any kind of influence over any of the recruits or anything that was coming in. So, it bothered me but it did not have a huge adverse effect on me, because I always say I'm lucky because I had all the other parts of the support network covered. Good family at home, didn't have the stresses that a lot of people have with family issues. I was involved in Smoke Divers, which is an outside training group, so I could be fulfilled that I was, you know, being able to use my creativity and talents and in that area, and then being involved in all the other stuff like the union and all that. So I didn't rely on just the one thing. And, but I saw the effects that some of that had on other people that, you know, some of them quit, some of them, struggled with addiction. Some of them, just sort of became retired on duty, and they were there, but they really didn't contribute. And it was just like survival. And I always thought it was a shame that we didn't get the maximum potential out of the folks and the talent that we had. So that was kind of my side of it, more so than, traumatic calls and things, of which I went to also. But I think because, you know, I had all those other components in, I was able to deal with them, successfully in, you know, my own way, because I had all these other outlets. But if you take away any one of those, then it obviously can affect your whole life and cause you a lot of issues. So, in my inaugural FDIC keynote, I wanted to really bring that point out, because I saw so much talk about PTSD when it comes to, calls that people run and, all that. And I saw pretty much all of the attention going that direction. And from the people that I had talked to, they were like, "And the calls aren't really what's bugging me. It's the crappy promotional process where, you know, I feel like I've been skipped over 15 times, but I was the highest scorer on the test. Or, I want to contribute in this way, but I'm not allowed to." And, you know, it doesn't mean that the departments have to surrender their power or whatever, but it does mean that we have to really look in the mirror and say, it's easy to blame all these problems on bad calls that folks run, but not everybody's running a bad call every day. And so sometimes it's just the accumulation of being treated like crap that eventually drags you down into the dumps. And so I wanted to kind of highlight that, but not take away from the other either, because it absolutely is proven, you know, in science that there is calls that can, one call could be the trigger that causes you issues, or it could be a combination of 20 years of calls that bring issues. So when I came to you guys, I want you to talk about all of it. And I want you to talk to people and find out how they, what was their recipe for success, if they have been successful in overcoming it, because I honestly don't think there's one magic solution to any of it. I think, there's some key ingredients that help everybody, but everybody kind of has their own, coping mechanisms and success stories. And I want the rest of the fire service to hear those stories. And, even when we talk about people writing articles, one thing that I tell people when they want to tell their story, I'm like, "Hey, I know your story is like, just, it could be a movie, but I only want you to spend two paragraphs telling what happened. And I want you to spend the other 15 paragraphs telling how you dealt with it and what your, you know, recipe for success was." So, everybody everybody needs a support network. And that can be in the form of just listening to somebody else's story. It can be professional help. And I hope that this show throws all the options out there and lets people, know what's out there to help them. And that, everybody needs help at some point, even if it's just talking to a buddy or a friend, and kind of tear down some of the stigma of I'm tough and everything's gonna be all right because I'm tough, and it works for a little while, but that'll eventually catch up to you. And like I said, some people just need a couple friends to talk with, and other people need to be on the couch, as we were talking about earlier. It just depends. It depends on you. So
yeah, I didn't know. That's a great explanation, covering a lot of history, right? How do you persevere, right? In a 38-year career, not to mention whatever happened before that. I like when you share about not, the narrative doesn't have to be about the negative things. There's always some tough days, right?
Yeah.
Personally and professionally, calls that we're not going to forget. And that's okay because our brain keeps that. But the big piece that you mentioned, and I want to ask Chris about, because from a different generation, right? I'm 59, me and you are around the same age, and came up in different parts of the country. Chris, both from a Marine veteran and a veteran of the fire service, in his the middle of his career, from different ranks, trying to manage a family and job, and like you mentioned, potentially organizational stress, or even, as you mentioned to people, or in general, like organizational betrayal. But the biggest thing here is, yeah, this is not going to be about woe is me and you got in a fire service, it's the wrong job. No, it's the greatest job in the world, and it's paid dividends to many people. But it isn't a singular event. As you mentioned, there are many different things that created David Rhodes and put you in a position currently now is you're the guy. But you've been the guy for many years for different reasons, being mentored and a mentee. But you mentioned about protective factors, and that is so important in resilience throughout one's person's life. You mentioned family, spouse, kids, jobs, getting away from the fire service, getting into the fire service, being outside the fire service, and coming back into it. It's not just a singular event. Chris, you've been around the fire service for 15 years, the military for, I think it was 4 or 6 years.
Yep, 4 years.
And you're in and around a population that you're embedded right in the middle of your career. How does what Dave's share in regards to the protective factors resonate with you and the people that you see?
Yeah, I think Dave made a few good points, right? When you come into the fire service, you want to be involved in everything, right? And you want to be part of this, you want to be part of that. And I think balance, you have to find the balance. One thing when you were introducing Chief and he was kind of talking about his career up until this point, in my head, I was like, my gosh, how did he balance it all, right? The point being is that everybody's balance is different, because even people will tell me that, how do you balance it all? And so you have to find your balance. And I think something else that Chief Rhodes made pretty good mention of is sometimes the stress doesn't come from the calls, right? It's the organizational leadership. It's the challenges of maybe the bosses you work for. And I want to highlight on that for a second, because I know for me and my own personal journey is, when we do make those tough calls, what did I do before that tough call happened, right? It's the training. And so when I walk away from that tough call, if I know that I did absolutely everything in my power, does it necessarily make it easy? No. But does it make it easier? Yes. And so oftentimes it comes back to the things that we can't control. And so I know for my mental health, right, if I can be the best that I can be. And, you know, it's interesting because I was watching a video the other day, and it was the last Georgia smoke diver class. And there was one of the instructors, he said something pretty powerful. He said, you know, we train 99% of the time for that 1% call. And it just kind of goes right back to that message. And then, you know, and you've heard me say it before, Dan, is there's this saying that I try to normalize in today's fire services. It's okay to not be okay, right? It's okay to be the tough guy when we pull up and, you know, whatever the situation it is. But after the situation's done, it's being humble enough to say, hey, you know, like Chief said, maybe I need to talk to somebody. Maybe it's sit on the couch, right? Maybe it's go talk to, you know, the professionals that's what they do. But it's a very dynamic, and maybe the way that you dealt with the last call or the last situation or the last boss, it's not one recipe that's going to work for 15, 20 or 30 years. Right.
So you got a lot on your plate, Chief. As Chris just mentioned, if I would have gone through your whole autobiography, we would still be talking about it now, 20 minutes into it, which is fantastic. But what does a day look like for Chief Rhodes? And then I'm going to say this for myself is I took my, at times, physical, but especially my mental health for granted for many years. Not to say it was bad. It just wasn't intentional by me. Mm-hmm. As kind of Chris just mentioned, and for you, with all the things that you're still doing and mentoring, sometimes could even be more challenging, right? Because as you do that and you try to manage yourself, but you're trying to support other people, it feels good. But when they don't, when they need help, you want to be there as well. What does a day look like for Chief Rhodes in managing wellness?
90% of the time, it's 5:30, wake up for an hour workout down here in my office, which is big enough to accommodate that right now. So do that, then, you know, go shower, get ready for the day, start checking emails, of which on average are probably 200 to 300 a day. Some spam, some just company items that come through that you need to be aware of, but they all take some kind of action. Returning phone calls, usually several weeks behind before you get to, you know, one of those. And then a couple of times a month, it's, you know, travel to the airport, fly off to whatever city for whatever meeting or presentation or award ceremony. And then the funny thing with that is, so, you know, you're going to an awards banquet, you got travel the day before, then the prep when you're there, then you leave out the next morning, but nothing stopped. You couldn't deal with any of the normal work coming in, but nothing stopped. So, thank goodness for cell phones where you can actually can check email and all. And usually I'm down here in the office, which is luckily for me at home. So I'm down in the basement in my home office, other than travel and meetings. And, it's a full day. It is absolutely full day on the computer, reading, writing, recording shows, talking on the phone with people that I'm trying to get to write or get to do a show, and planning out, you know, the schedule for the magazine, for FDIC, reading book proposals. There's really no set thing for the day. It's whatever comes up, because we may get a book proposal today, or it may be a certain time of the month where it's time to crunch, make sure that all the articles are ready for the magazine. So it's, you know, it's not unlike the fire department in wearing many hats. The only thing that is definitely different is that it is a consistent schedule for the most part, other than travel. So it's, you know, 8 to 5 off on Saturday, Sunday, which I have never had since 1985, because I've always had shift work and 3 or 4 extra jobs, you know, to fill in the gaps on the off time. So, it is busy, but, I did okay. I do okay now with the balance of it. I do have to force myself to shut off the computer and, you know, go cut a tree down or cut the grass or just get away, because it will suck you into, there's enough stuff to do that you can work 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you'll still never get everything you want to accomplish. And then the biggest thing is just putting together a really good team of folks to handle, certain parts, and definitely the nuts and bolts of the magazine and FDIC and all that just take hours and hours. It's the very non-glamorous part, is you have to have a really good team that's dedicated to those behind the scenes role. Yep. So it's a full day every day. No qualms about it.
Go ahead, Dan. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, no, I appreciate that. And one of the things, and I'm going to offer this to you, but I think that you embody it, is that I can remember my days of whether it be an officer or chief officer, and people would ask, well, what kind of day do you expect? And expect the unexpected, right? If you go into the day in a mindset of, God, I hope this day is, you know, slow or easy, you just set yourself up for failure. I tell every officer, I'm like, you get on the job, you're there for 24 hours, let it happen. You do, right? You kind of shared that, is that for all those people that aren't getting a response from Chief Rhodes or a text or email or a phone call, there should be an automatic response. You are 27th in the queue.
I talked to somebody today, as a matter of fact, and I was checking my personal email, which kind of takes a backseat to my fire engineering email, and something that got sent a couple weeks ago, and I was like, oh, I need to call this person back. So I called them back, and they, you know, were asking, and then I was like, well, let me send you my company email, because I'm on it all day and I see it. So I pulled up their number to text it to them, and I saw that they had sent me a text like November 11th and said, hey, can you give me a call? And I'm sure I saw it, but it kind of went by the wayside. So you have to have systems, write a lot of notes, but there's probably a couple of handfuls of people out there that are like, that guy's a jerk, man. He never called me back or whatever. My voicemail is always full. I can clear it out at 6 o'clock in the morning and it'll be full by 2 o'clock. And you know how it is. 50% of them are spam calls trying to get me to refinance or get my COVID money that I haven't applied for yet or whatever it is. But it's a lot. It's a lot. And you want it, you know, you said it earlier, being in this position, like you want to get back to everybody and you want to entertain everybody's ideas and thoughts. And I think we do pretty good, but we're definitely not 100% for sure. So if anybody is out there, you just have to keep being the squeaky wheel with text and email, and you'll eventually come up. You'll eventually come up in the queue. Nobody's intentionally being ignored, I can tell you that.
You mentioned the balance, and obviously what you're doing today looks maybe a lot different than 15, 20 years ago. And I think that's probably worth noting, is that balance changes, right? Maybe
absolutely
personally and professionally, like when you're maybe a rookie firefighter versus a company officer, a battalion chief, that balance changes. And then even in your personal life, you know, you'd mentioned earlier running kids around, and I have a 10 and a 13 year old. And so we're in that phase right now. And part of that balance is I find outlets in that, being able to go to my kids' game, being able to be mm-hmm. at their practices. And so that's therapeutic in my, for me, right? So I might not necessarily be out playing golf, or I might not be going somewhere with the guys, but so finding, you know, being able to use other things that what I like to say are low hanging fruit can be balanced therapy. As to where now, you said your kids are grown and last one's in college. And so getting up and working out for an hour each day, that's your new balance.
It's not quite as difficult. Yeah. Because during those times, the only time I had to work out was at the fire station. You know, either I say, I mean, everybody can make time, but just the way schedules were, you were up taking somebody to school and then, you know, picking somebody up. And again, the two parents going in different directions because one's at this school over here and the other two are over in this school. So, it was tough. And, I wasn't always the best at it. I guess the toughest years, for my wife were when our kids were little. And of course, as you know, fate would have it, I get elected union president the same year that my first kid's born. And, so that means that not only am I 24-48, we didn't have any special release or anything. So during the week it was, you know, fire station Monday, union office Tuesday, come home by about 6 or 7 Tuesday night, go back to the union office Wednesday, get home 6-7 o'clock Wednesday, and then back for a 24-hour shift Thursday, and then back to the union hall on Friday. Saturday off, and my wife actually worked at a hospital. She worked shift works, and she worked weekends. So she would work like a full weekend on the Baylor shift. So it was truly chaos. We had to have 24-hour babysitters. You know, we had some college kids, and then we had other folks that we used. And sometimes we had two. We would have one kid at this house for 24 hours if she happened to be working and I was on duty, at a minimum for 10 or 12 hours. My parents were close at that time, so they kept them at for a few years in that range. But yeah, you have to figure it out, and you have to, you know, you have to know it's not going to be easy, but you come up with a strategy that works, and you get all the things accomplished you want to, but you still have that responsibility, that primary responsibility of making sure that their needs are taken care of. And that's huge. And we touched on it earlier. We talked about how like the organization can be the cause. You can flip that around too and say, there are folks in the fire department where the fire department is not the cause, but the family issues are the cause, and they're miserable at work, but it's not necessarily the fire department's, policies or calls or issues. So it can come from either one of those sides. But yes, you definitely change over time because, you know, I know for my wife's sake, once our kids were older, could buckle themselves in the car seat, feed themselves, go to the bathroom and all that, that stress lightened up, you know, a little bit. The toughest part then wasn't the shifts as so much. It was, the week long trips to teach somewhere or, you know, participate in whatever, FDIC. I've been doing FDIC for 27 years, I guess. So, you know, that was always a 10-day event. So there's a lot of strategy in working out, you know, things there. And actually, for the first time ever, my wife is going on a trip work-related with me this coming up weekend. First time ever. And it's just a quick little, you know, I got to go up for a meeting, in Charlotte and then right back. But I'm like, hey, guess what? You know, we don't have all these responsibilities and we're just coming off of, we had, my mother-in-law here that we were primary caregivers for, and she passed away a few weeks ago. So, you know, that was a whole nother dynamic. Even though the kids were gone, we had that responsibility. in addition. And I'll have to say, the hospice crew and the people that we had come in and help, those people are saints. I don't think you get through any of that without those folks. So you never know, you know, the cycle continues. And unless you're single and don't have any kids, you got a whole nother dynamic, you know, of things that people don't have to worry about. And that old saying, it's like, be careful, because you never know what somebody's dealing with. You know, everything's funny and chipper and everything, but all of a sudden somebody doesn't want to talk and doesn't want to do something one day, and you start poking the bear. You have no idea, you know, what's going on at home, whether it's a sick relative, family member, it's a financial issue, somebody, you know, spouse lost a job, and your benefits are getting canceled on one side. It's a lot. And it's, you know, everybody always said life's not fair, and it's not. And you have to build up that resiliency to be able to deal with it. And it doesn't matter if you're in the fire service or in law enforcement, or you're a nurse, or if you're a teacher. Everybody deals with adversity in some form or fashion. Ours is sometimes a little more dramatic when it comes to, you know, the things we see and deal with, but everybody, and that, I think that's something that I hope follows the path of RIT. Like, RIT was a specialty class at one point, and we, you know, you had to go somewhere that somebody was teaching RIT. Now it's a part of every recruit school. So hopefully the mental health awareness of what can happen, signs and things to be cautious of, and that awareness can reach its way into recruit schools, so that people have a better understanding of what's happening to them, what'll happen over time, you know, and have some examples, and then what to do about it, of course, is the biggest thing. But I think, putting that awareness out there in the beginning is going to be a crucial shift over the next, you know, few years. Some people are already doing it, but, it's definitely not, a widespread majority of departments. They may mention it, and may have like their EAP representatives come in and give the little standard spill, but, nothing to the degree. I mean, it probably should be a couple of days of curriculum in a recruit school.
Yeah, you covered a lot of things. Hopefully everybody was really listening and taking notes. I took a couple of notes, and going back to the fact that you were a union president and Chris was a union president, I guess once a union president, always a union president, because you're always getting calls from somebody going, hey, what did you do then? Or how should we handle this? And you're like, I'm not working there anymore. But the number of calls that you get, right, not just 9 to 5, but as you turn your phone on in the morning, or if you don't turn it off, or you look at it in the morning or at night, and in the meals that are interrupted, or the events with your spouse, which will lead into the next thing, is that when you said your spouse wanted to go on a work trip with you, I don't think people, unless they've been in situations like yourself, I've been in there where I've invited my wife and she said, no, I don't want to go. And first I was offended. I'm like, what do you mean you don't want to go? You don't want to go to Florida? You don't want to go to Texas? She's like, what I didn't see was she didn't want to share me with other people. She wanted right. time with me. And I know that's what you were saying here, mm-hmm. but the average person wouldn't have caught that unless they've experienced it with their own spouse. Mm-hmm. To add on to that, the number one and two reason people called our union's EAP, and as I ran Chicago Fire's union's employee assistance program, you wouldn't have guessed it. Chris wouldn't have guessed it. Nobody else would have guessed. I wouldn't have guessed it. I kept stats. And the number one reason was because of relationships with your significant other. Mm-hmm. And then a number two reason was what you kind of led with in the beginning was organizational stress and organizational betrayal, which was work-related issues. And that's why you had union presidents and trustees and board members to negotiate conflicts amongst the membership and the administration. So I hope everybody was listening to what you were saying, because you shared, but quietly shared, some golden nuggets to be aware of, is that you know you've arrived when your spouse says, hey, can I come along? Or when you ask and they're like, yeah, I'll come along. That's a big deal, right, Chief?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, you know, the reason it's taken until now is there wasn't the opportunity because of all the other responsibilities. And this just happens to be somewhere pretty close. We have some family members in the area. So I'm like, hey, I am tied up all day Saturday, but you can, you know, take the truck and go visit and whatever. But we'll have the ride up Friday, dinner Friday, kind of see the town a little bit Sunday morning before we head back. But it's just kind of to break up the monotony of just being here, stuck in the house, you know, forever. And then she may come to FDIC too. We're trying to work that out. But, you know, very upfront and honest, I'm like, if you're coming, you need to come the Friday, Saturday before FDIC, because once Monday hits, you will never see me. You know, like, I am obligated and whatever. And you know, that's not fun. You know, you're tagging along and you're being pulled, and then I'm distracted on, you know, well, I need to do this, but yeah, I've got work obligations here. So those are some tough ones, but like, it'll be kind of neat to get her to come up there at least for a couple of dinners and meet the other people I work with, other than, you know, a Zoom call or whatever. She'll get to see some of the folks in person. But yeah, it's situational, and it's not that it's like horrible if it can't happen, because there's some people you see, they travel together everywhere and their spouse is involved and everything. I never had that, and never really wanted it. It was like fire department over here, family over here. I didn't really mix the two. They knew what I did, but other than a station visit, maybe once or twice a year, like, they weren't regulars every day that I was working on shift, or, you know, regulars coming up on Sunday to eat, which some people's families did come up every Sunday. You know that their family was going to come by, and it's awesome. But that wasn't my style. And I guess maybe some of that had to do with some of the stuff from that leadership side, that, you know, I'm like, I'm protecting you from being exposed to this, you know? And they knew some of the people, you know, that were friends, that we did things off duty and all, but they just sort of knew that I was a firefighter and didn't know what all that really looked like. I was more so the pancake maker on, you know, the weekends I was home than I was anything else.
I never became the pancake maker. My wife would not let me do it. What about you, Chris?
Dude, I was professional. I could make them into Mickey Mouse with chocolate chip. I could do it. I could do it all.
I think, Chief, you know, bringing up that about your wife going with you, I think that's pretty important, especially for people listening. You know, obviously family is important to mental health and having the good home front. And so maybe you can't do the big week-long vacation, and, you know, you have your wife works and kids and all these sports and all these other things, right? But maybe you're going to a weekend training and your, you know, parents or family can watch the kids and your wife can tag along. And maybe it's a 4.5 hour car ride up, and, you know, that 4.5 hours in itself just in the car. And so, you know, I think finding little things like that where they can plug in, and you're starting to see more and more of the conferences where they're starting to include like a spouse's night, or there's events for spouses and encouraging that. So I think sometimes we're like, oh my gosh, I haven't spent time with my wife. Let me plan this trip to Florida for a week. Well, we can't go for a year and a half. Cool. How can we find little things that we can do? Right. Cause, you know, maybe it's just a weekend, but it could be powerful.
Yeah. And sometimes it's just a dinner, you know, out.
Just a dinner.
And it sounds really easy, but it's not always. And you get stuck in that routine where you're too tired to do anything. You know, you finally got home and, you know, you're like, you know, hey, you want to go out and get something to eat? I just want to sit here.
Well, you know,
it's tough.
Yeah. I'll tell you real quick. I had a pretty chaotic week, and then I was going out of town this weekend for training, and Friday night was literally my only night home. And my wife texted me Thursday night and she said, can we have a date night tomorrow night? And my first thought was, really, it's my only night to sit before I go out of town. But then
hopefully she's not listening to this.
So I wind up taking her on the date night. But in my head, you know, the first thing I thought of after I thought of that was, well, I created this environment. She didn't. Right. I created this work schedule. I created this responsibility. I'm the one that asked to go to this training this weekend, not her. So why is it fair to her that I'm, you know, so those are things that we have to think about.
For sure. And nobody gets it perfect. So you just, you know, work through it and do the best you can. And like they say, you learn from the mistakes. The biggest thing is to communicate and know what's happening and don't let anything get to the boil over point. But nobody's going to do it perfect. There's a couple guys out there that you think are doing it perfect. When you see their little flirty text messages they send and, oh yeah, don't forget, you know, you need to do this and all. And you're like, dude, I know it's not that perfect.
So that's interesting. Let's talk about perfect. So like the perfect scenario, we talked about this before we got on the show, Chief. I'm in my basement and I got a little thing in the back, right? Cause my basement's not done. Yours is obviously done. And my guy, Chris, co-host, he's got the brick wall behind him, but he's missing like the integral part of a podcast, right? The microphone.
Yeah. It's missing.
Yes. He has microphone envy.
So how do we get him there? I mean, if we're going to continue this, is this going to work? I need you to mentor him, Chief.
We're going to have to up his game.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. It's coming, Chief. Promise.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. You do know that you're not getting paid for this, right, Chris? So if you're waiting for a check from Fire Engineering or Clarion, it's not happening.
Tell your wife, no date nights for 3 months. You got to get a microphone. To do a free podcast.
Yeah. And it's going to take an hour of your time. But so a little levity is always good. We need that from a balance standpoint. Sometimes in a fire service, right, we could eat our youngs, and look for conflict. But you've been with FDIC and Fire Engineering for a quarter of a century?
Yeah, a little longer.
And for, 15 of those years, 16 of those years, you've been with, you know, Bobby Halton, right?
Yeah, it was, I think 18 years total.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was there before Bobby was editor, and I was there. Bill Manning actually brought me on board to, as an instructor in the HOT program. And then that transitioned into me being in charge of logistics for the HOT and then a HOT coordinator. And then Bobby came along and I still continued in that role. I got more responsibility in helping pick classes and that during Bobby's years as we refined that system. But yeah, I've been there a long time. That was one thing a lot of people didn't realize that I'd actually been there longer than Bobby, but I was there as a part-time contractor where he was there, you know, full-time for 18 years.
Yeah. And I can only imagine, I only knew Bobby for about 8 or 9 years, but there were, as I think many of us have learned, if you knew of Bobby, that was a great experience. But if you were kind of exposed to his inner circle, that was a blessing. And I can only imagine from a work standpoint, you had to, how many times a day did you chat with him?
At least two or three. There was rarely a day that we didn't talk. And that included weekends. And sometimes the weekends were more text, but some of it was absolute just fun stuff. Hey, did you see somebody posted this? This is hilarious. Yeah. And other times it was like, hey, what about, you know, how do we do this and get this class? Can we do this? And just like a fire department, you know, you're always balancing the resources you have against what you want to accomplish. And so we had much grander plans for everything than we could ever pull off. But what we did pull off, you know, was pretty spectacular. But the dreams were all, you know, still there is what we could do. You know, we'd like to have 40 hot classes and, you know, 100 classroom sessions a day and all that. But you're restricted in space, time, money, and all that. But yeah, it was a very, very unique and rewarding, work relationship that turned into a long-term friendship, to where we did have that, you know, sometimes it would just call just to be goofing off, talking about, you know, funny stuff and who did what and the fun gossip stuff.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the friend thing, because that's, you might have got an impression of where I was going with this, is that, you know, it was work related. Besides all the calls and all the queues and all the emails and all the stuff that has to go on, and then all the unexpected stuff, you still had to talk to Bobby at the time. And now I'm sure you have your people that you interact with more so than others, but you still interact with a whole team of people. But then on top of that, from a balance standpoint, besides your three children, besides your spouse, besides your own wellness, right? Like you kind of shared, you wake up in the morning, you worked out. And I know that Bob would make calls at times when he was on the treadmill, you know, mm-hmm. and sounding like he was climbing Mount Everest, yeah. But he would take that time out as a wellness conversation. From a personal standpoint, obviously a great loss to the fire service in general with losing Bobby. I know from myself is that most people I've talked to, FDIC has not skipped a beat with you in there, and you've come with your own conviction and storyline. But there's got to be a personal loss with not having Bobby there and have those things there. I don't want to, I kind of been putting on your spot, but asking you, is there a void there and how do you manage
it? Yeah, for sure. And I guess, you know, I'm pretty sure I wrote about this in one of the editorials, maybe the first one I did, but I guess I was kind of conditioned for that. I lost I lost my childhood best friend when I was in ninth grade. And he was my next door neighbor, ride the school bus, play together every day, you know, till dark, ride motorcycles on Saturday from sun up to sundown. And he got killed in a car wreck. And let's see, I was 14. I guess he was 13. We were only like a month apart, but the way the schools were, we ended up being in different grades because I started before he did. And then Scott Millsap was just a huge mentor to me from about 19 years old, you know, starting in the fire service. He ran the smoke diver program, and we lost him. He was only 45 to thyroid cancer. And that was a huge void. And I took over the smoke diver program from him. And so looking back, that was kind of like training in the making, because those were, I mean, the personality was huge. The respect and the following, and this way before social media and all that stuff, but just the the network that he had built was huge. And it's like, how can anybody replace that iconic of a figure? And then, you know, fast forward 25 years from that is, Bobby passing away and kind of passing the torch. So it was very much the same. And the void is, more so in just the general conversation, I guess, than the business, because you kind of can figure that part out and there's other people to talk to. So it's more the loss of the friendship than it is, the mentor in the business, because, like, you know, I get asked all the time, how'd you end up being the editor of Fire Engineering? I'm like, watch Forrest Gump, you know, see all the things that happened to him. It's kind of the same thing. Just sort of Forrest Gumped my way into the position. And, you know, Bobby was very peculiar. It's, it was interesting that he even mentioned, like, 3 years ago, like me taking over, because he was very cautious and he didn't want to be upstaged. He had his ways of doing things and all. And I think it's because I just did my work in the logistics. I didn't care about being on the stage and, you know, I wrote articles and all that, but I was in charge at Smoke Divers and kind of had my platform there. I wasn't in competition with him and didn't really, I wasn't like after the job, if that makes sense. And I think that made him very relaxed around me, that I'm like, I wasn't trying to get his job. I was just supporting him in his job. And so he was like, yeah, I think I can put him on the list, on the short list of folks to, you know, come in. And the plan was for him to work a few more years and transition, you know, bits and pieces of the work over to me. But it's definitely a void, but I think you know, when you miss somebody that you've talked to every day and had that relationship with, you know, it's like everything else. You can look at it as it's the end of the world and, you know, what do I do now? I'm lost. Or you look at it and say, man, I was lucky. Mm. That was a special time and a special relationship and I was lucky to have it. And then you move on and you try to honor them, not by mentioning their name every day or not by, you know, having their picture on the wall everywhere you go or whatever, but by doing a good job. I think that's the best way to honor somebody is doing it your way, because they wouldn't want you imitating them, but they want you to have been influenced by, you know, what it is they do. So it's a special thing.
Yeah. Thanks for going there and sharing that, because I think those people that might see, you know, Bobby Halton, the people before him, you, editor in chief, Fire Engineering, be like, I want to do that. And you're like, oh, maybe really? Sit that.
Yeah.
Yeah, really? But again, the special relationships, favorable, and then when they're not, right? Not from an organizational stress, but the loss. You mentioned having lost, and I didn't know that, and I appreciate you offering that. When you mentioned that, I thought about the people closest to me. I lost my cousin, Blaine, at 18, and then another cousin later, soon thereafter. And I don't really mention that too often, but that doesn't define me, but it did have a sharp, you know, there's a sharp pain in there, but I know I need to be connected with others. And what I've heard from you throughout this conversation, you know, family, balance, work, time for yourself, you know, including others, having that levity, having those people that you can confide in. I'm not going to ask you, because I'm sure based on what you've said so far, you have those three people or five people that you're like, hey, I'm not saying sometimes I need a timeout and I need to call somebody or text somebody, mm-hmm. more currently it's my spouse, but I also have other people that I can, and in the past, honestly, sometimes it was Bobby, just to say, just a short 3-word text, and you'd get a response, and that's a connection. I'm assuming you have, how many do you have? If you put a number,
probably 4.
Okay.
Yeah. And that'd be like, you know, 4 go-to folks. Nobody would know who they were, more than likely, than other than somebody that was close into, you know, my circle of folks. But, yeah, there's probably at least 4. And then there's another handful or a dozen that might be sort of situational. And not necessarily, for any kind of major problem or anything, but just, advice or somebody to talk something out, you know, talk something out with. And those people are usually way far removed from whatever it is, that's going on. And I always joke with the smoke divers, as I said, eventually I'll always come and offer support, but eventually I want to be the guy standing over there at the grill that all the young guys know used to be in charge, and they're almost afraid to go speak to, you know. And it's like, there's some problem that comes up and they're like, you go ask him. And like, I'm not going to go ask him. You go ask him. And then they come over there and they go, hey, can I ask you something? And you go, yeah. And they're like, well, we got this situation and blah, 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 and da, 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 da. And how do you think we ought to handle it? And then you go, well, how do you think you should handle it? And then they give you an answer. And then you go, well, why the hell did you ask me then? You go back to flipping the hamburgers. Kind of be that old grouchy old man. I don't know if anybody's old enough to remember, but I always really admired the character Red and Baba Black Sheep. You know, he had the heart of gold and he cared about the air. He was the mechanic. He cared about the airplanes, but he gave everybody teetotal hell to keep them on their on their toes. He would do anything for them, but he really made you like work for it. And Tom Brennan was similar to that. You know, he'd be riding in the car with him and he would ask you a question, you know, something fire related. And then you were afraid to answer because you didn't want to be wrong in front of Tom Brennan, right? And then one of his lines was, he's like, come on, kid, tell me what you got. I don't give this shit away for free. And so then you come out with an answer and he'd be like, okay, yeah. And then he would explain his side of it or everything. And it was everything from the most useless piece of equipment on the fire engine to, you know, how many people should be staffed on a rig, but he had those conversations always testing you. So
I appreciate that analogy at the grill, but I not that I've known you for a long time, but I find it hard to believe that you'd have that growl.
I
think you'd really
it.
Have to practice.
I just aspire to it.
That's great. So couple last questions. I'm going to let Chris ask his question. My question, from a variety of different things, right? From the 38 years, from all of your learned experience, you've had mentors, you've mentored others, right? That kind of have asked you, you don't go, hey, can I mentor you? Right. It happens the other way around.
Very organic. Yeah.
So what does Chief David Rhodes tell the new guy?
Well, you talk about the new firefighter coming into the fire department or just,
and I guy? Should, I say new guy, but I meant, you know what I mean? Anybody coming into fire service. So new firefighter that's coming in, and maybe more specifically from kind of what we're, our conversation today, right? You know, train and all that stuff and be the best and come in with an initiative. But from a mental health awareness standpoint, what do you, because we've talked about that, is that we don't want to mitigate after a crisis. Right. We want to get into the very beginning. So you're in the academy now, and we've talked about that. From every academy across the country, there should be a week-long training in regards to behavioral health 101. Not necessarily peer support, right? Mm-hmm. There's classes out there, and that's great, and there's going to be that. But from a behavioral health mental wellness standpoint, what does Chief Rhodes say to that class?
Force yourself to take off and be away from the system. I don't know that there's a magic formula, but I do know that in my first 5 to 10 years, I never wanted to be off because I was afraid I was going to miss something. And, whether that's, you know, a million overtime shifts or whatever is, you need to be away from it. And, some people totally disagree with me on this, but I've given this advice to 1,000 people. If you are going to work another job in addition to the fire department, do something totally different. With the exception of if you're an instructor and you got your own company that instructs, that's different. But I think working 24 hours at the fire department and then going to work 12 hours on an ambulance or 24 hours on an ambulance is a quick path to burnout. It's easy because it's like, you know, you got the same certification and the opportunities are there and people are always hiring. But I recommend against it. I think that you should, you know, I would rather see you framing houses or cutting grass or doing something like that than working another shift somewhere else. And if you're going to work overtime, balance that and don't get reliant on it to the point where your bills outpace your regular income. If you're working overtime, that should be extra that you're saving or investing in something that's going to bring you some additional income. I think that right there is the root of a lot of problems. Obviously financial stress is one of the biggest ones, along with relationships, and sometimes they're intertwined together. But that would be probably the first thing that I would recommend. And then the other thing I would say is that you're not going to get everything you need to be successful within the organization. So you need to get outside the organization and talk to other groups and folks and training opportunities that are outside your own department, because you get very narrow tunnel vision when all you see is what's inside your organization. And then I'd, you know, list out some of the landmines and tripwires that are out there of, you know, be aware of problems surfacing within your unit. Be aware that not everything's going to be fair at work. You can work to try to make it fair, as fair as possible. You're not going to always be happy with the assignment you get, but don't take that out on the people that are around you. You know, whether you're a captain and you'd wanted to go to this station, but you ended up here, it's not those people's fault. So your job is to create a good functional environment within the one that you have, and work for that. Pay attention, listen to people when they're talking to you, as far as you need to learn the skills and learn the job before you move into a leadership role, for sure. Master the basics and gain your street cred and your skills so that you can make good decisions when you're in those positions. They'll make it a lot easier for you. But try to identify those trip mines, and I'd probably I don't know them all, but I think bringing in a few people to talk about their experiences in the fire department would be good for a recruit class, so that they get a little more than just something from me. But I did for years go back to the union when they were doing union recruiting day. I'd go and tell a couple of my stories, and hell, they'd be scared not to join the union after what had happened to me. So they enjoyed that. But I would always end and say, hey, a lot of scary times, a lot of stuff, but it's, you have the opportunity here to participate in the greatest experience that you could ever have. And there'll be ups and downs, but there'll be more ups than there will be downs, for sure. And the further you're away from it, the less you remember of the bad, especially the organizational part. You know, it all goes away. So I guess it's very similar to the grief process, is that, you know, the further you're away from it, you start to remember. When I retired, I could definitely remember more bad than I did good. But now that's sort of flipped. I'm remembering, you know, a lot of the good stuff, the stuff that you really miss, you know, the antics and the conversations and of course the every day's a feast and every meal's a feast and every day's a holiday routine.
Yeah, well, thanks for that, Chief. Chris, you got something for him?
I do, just briefly, Chief. So, I mean, obviously we talked a lot today about personal, but then also organizational. And so from an organizational standpoint, a message to, you know, the leaders of the departments, what's the level of importance when it comes to, you know, prioritizing mental health and having programs, whether it be a simple peer support team, full-blown city AAP team. And, you know, we spend millions of dollars a year on fire trucks and technical rescue and all the things which are important. But what would your message be to the ones that are making those decisions at the top?
It's just like fire prevention. You need to put the time and the resource into the awareness, the preventative things, and you need to create an atmosphere that prevents the problems from happening in the first place. Knowing that that's utopia, then you have to have your response mechanisms for when things happens that are beyond your control. So it's a full system. And, I think that there's a lot of infrastructure out there, whether it be the union, peer support, or a lot of departments have hired private companies to come in and kind of run their, process. But I think, you know, we're not the best at it, but we always say that, you know, prevention first. So model your system and create fair, transparent promotional processes and disciplinary procedures that are universally applied across the board. And this person doesn't get one, disciplinary action, and the other person who does the same thing gets, you know, another one. You have to really self-assess that, because you may not see it. But I think, you should survey the troops and find out where their head is, you know, and say, are our policies fair? Are they, you know, enforced equally and all that? And do we have adequate resources for the experiences that you've had? But I think if we spent the majority of our time in that prevention phase and creating a good culture, then we wouldn't have as many things to respond to, because people would have the support, they would have the resiliency and the coping mechanisms. The calls would still be the same, but they would be able to deal with them much better.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Chief. Again, going back to protective factors, right? If we have more protective factors around us, we can pretty much do anything. It's not that it's going to be where we're not going to be tired or hungry, mad or sad, but we're going to be able to persevere. Appreciate that. Hey, on behalf of myself and Chris, I want to appreciate your time, your candor, answering all the questions, going into this realm from a leadership standpoint. I mean, from the guy, right? You are the editor-in-chief of Fire Engineering, giving us this platform to talk about mental wellness. I want to use that word mental wellness because anytime you say mental, right, we have all those negative connotations that are associated with it. But I think the greater majority of this conversation and going forward is going to try to change that narrative in a sense. Mental wellness should be physical wellness and all intertwined so that we can not only have a great career, great family, but then it doesn't define us. The fire service doesn't just define us. It's who else are we and into retirement or whatever that looks like. Mm-hmm. Thanks again for your time. I don't know if you mentioned it, but did you announce the keynotes for FDIC in April?
We did. Yeah.
Okay.
Scott Thompson is Wednesday, and Jason Hovelman is Thursday.
Okay.
So, yep. They are, they were notified months ago and have plenty of good material.
Yeah, that's one thing for another show, whether it be ours or somebody else's, is the time and preparation that goes into necessary to be a keynote speaker.
Yep.
It doesn't take a minute. It doesn't take a week. It takes really like kind of like everybody in we just watched the Super Bowl, right? So they're planning and preparing for the next Super Bowl. That's pretty much what you offer the next keynoter. It takes a good 8 to 10 months to prepare, right?
We try to let them know by the end of August, you know, who it's going to be. And that comes after our board meeting in August when we discuss it and throw some possibilities out there. So, yeah, looking forward to both of them, and they'll have some really good messages. Scott's got some really good things going on in the colony where he's the fire chief, and he's doing some kind of non-traditional things with his staffing, and it's interesting. We're like I said, we like to eat our young, so some of the things he's done, he doesn't have staffing problems and he doesn't have applicant problems, but there's some industry people out there that are telling him he's ruining the fire service because of what he's doing, because he broke with the traditional model. But Bruno said it best, you know, if you're not changing, then you're backing up, really. So you need to change and morph your model into something that is going to work for your area. And what works in one area may not work in the other. That's the thing. There's no template that you apply. You know, where all firefighting's local, all politics are local, and there's common threads. But it's going to be interesting to hear him talk about the culture and some things that he's got going that I think have truly been successful. And then Jason's, of course, you know, he's a well-known kind of a leadership guru that is in a smaller department that does both fire and EMS. And it'll be good to hear his perspective on how he's dealing with some of the same issues.
Well, I look forward to it. It'll be my ninth year. I know that Chris and several of his McKinney firefighter brothers and sisters will be there as well. We got to get him to submit for a workshop or something, but let's get the mic first and then we'll work on the
baby steps. One thing at a time. Once he gets the mic, then we'll work on maybe like a computer with a keyboard so that he can put some thoughts down on electronically.
Yeah. You know, these kids these days that are in their 30s. All right. Yep. Well, till next time, this has been Dan and Chris with Mental Health Monthly with Chief David Rose.